Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. Just a little bit of a late start this morning. We had some minor technical difficulties, but those have been overcome, and I want to welcome you all to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and of course, I want to introduce my co-host, Rob Greenley. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good morning, Todd. It's great to be here. I'm on a kind of, my computer's acting up, but that's what it's life in the technology world, right? Not everything works the way you hope it does.
Yeah, that's
but it's great. It's great to be here and speak to Stephen here. So,
and I want to introduce our guest this morning. It's Stephen Beecham, and
that's right.
He's with CNET. He's actually in the studio in Alameda. So I was kind of looking back as you were, as we was waiting for Rob to jump in, and I was admiring your board there. You've got a nice mission control as well.
Yeah, I got a little Control 24 here at Moondog Studios. You know, I got it all lit up all nice for you guys.
It's always nice to have the eye candy. But before we get into everything we're going to kind of chat about today, just want to let you guys know, Rob, we made our goal. We made all the funding we needed to pay for everything for the podcast awards this year. So at least on my end, the New Media Expo folks are still looking to pick up a sponsor for the award ceremony, but the trophies and everything and my bills are paid. That's the main thing. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, that's exciting that you're all funded and ready to rock and roll with it. I think that's great news.
Yeah. And, you know, and it worked out well because the Cashfly guys were tweeting congratulations to Leo and a number of the shows that they actually work with. And I responded back, you never let a good opportunity go to waste. Right. So I said, hey, we still have a corporate sponsorship ready. And they like within about 15 minutes, they reached out and we had a decision with them in about an hour. So, that just couldn't have worked out better. So I'm really, really pleased to have them on and definitely appreciate them bringing their service and their cash to the party, I guess, for better words. Just to also give you guys a heads up, I got invited, to an event. Ford invited me and I'm going out to Tucson. I'll leave you tomorrow. I'm going out to an event called, Techonomy. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this event before, but it's a invite-only type of deal. And a couple of guys I know got invited. And it's really like an interesting agenda. It's a lot of business and technology and this kind of melding of minds and the lineup of people they have speaking is a lot of A-listers, which is pretty cool. But going out to Tucson, and they're at a Ritz-Carlton there that the event's going to be held at. So I'm going to be there through midweek with my other property, Geek News Central. So looking forward to talking with the folks there at that event. Be nice. It's just a little getaway here for time in Hawaii. Of course, in Hawaii, people say you want to have a getaway to the mainland to get away from Hawaii. And actually, sometimes you do. So, Rob, I think I'm going to let you kick this thing off this morning. Well, Stephen, and I know that Stephen, you head up the CNET TV side. You work. Go ahead, Rob. I'll let you start.
Yeah, it'd be great to get an update, Stephen, on what's going on at CNET TV. And yeah, I know that for many years you guys were big and continue to be big video podcasters in the space, and just wanted to get an update on what's new and what's hot with what you guys are doing. I know you're on a regular basis launching new shows and playing around with the kind of new media space to figure out what's working. If you could kind of just give us an update, kind of, you know, at the 30,000 foot view of what you're doing and what your priorities are today, around your video shows. And I don't know, are you guys doing much audio now? I think there's a few shows that you guys are doing that are audio. But yeah, if you could just kind of give us an update.
Sure. Yeah. Well, right now we only do two shows that have audio currently. We're right in the middle of holiday season, so that's huge for CNET. Everyone's coming to the site to look at reviews on what to buy for Christmas gifts and stuff like that. So we're doing a lot of holiday content. And we have just recently launched two new shows. We launched Googlelicious, which is a show all about Google, you know, all the weird stuff Google does. They're launching balloons. There's a barge sitting in the Bay Area. It's a really cool show with Brian Tong hosting that. And we also launched a new show called Next Big Thing with Brian Cooley, which just kind of showcases, you know, new technology that's coming, basically the next big thing, you know, it says it in the title. And really cool stuff. And we also launched CNET in Espanol, which is a huge endeavor. We totally created another CNET, but it's all in Spanish. And we have video, podcasts, and a YouTube channel for that. So check out CNET in Espanol. That's been a huge deal for us. And it's going to, you know, really launch us into a whole new realm of content users and stuff. So we're totally excited about that.
You know, I was looking at the website today and going over some of the stuff that you guys are doing. And I see that, you know, it looks to me like you guys try to keep it fresh. And with these two new shows, that's obviously a part of your, you know, part of your strategy. Do you guys find that launching new shows on a regular basis is it just keep people coming back or more in, you know, it's what is the, you know, what's the decision process you guys go behind on launching new shows?
Well, someone will have a great idea and say, hey, I want to, a lot of producers get to pitch shows and a lot of the hosts get to pitch shows. And sometimes someone will just have a great idea and we'll kind of have a little meeting about it and say, yeah, I think that would work. Like Googlelicious came about because Brian Tong, he already hosts Apple Byte, which is a show completely dedicated to Apple. So it's like every week they do, and it's just basically a 6 or 7 minute news show talking about all the news in Apple. We never really had anything like that for Google, and Google obviously is a massive corporation. So Brian Tong pitched a show, let's make a Googlelicious show. It'll be just like the Apple Byte, but all Google news. And we launched that show and people are just going crazy for it. They love it. They're like, finally, CNET's doing something about Google, you know? So we're really excited about that. And really, you know, the show launching process is it pretty much just comes down to who has a great idea for a show. How can we make it work? Will it be cost effective? Can we sell the show? And if everything checks out, then we'll go ahead and try out the show. Some shows have not lasted very long. Other shows go on for a long time and have sponsorships constantly, which is great. But yeah, for the most part, it's really comes down to the producers and the staff at CNET coming up with great ideas to launch.
You know, one of the things that I'm always, and I'm glad we have you on this week because it kind of fits in with some stuff I've got going on too. I know CNET always has a huge, huge presence at CES, and I'd like to hear about if you're involved in that and the planning and that production. For us, you know, we, for the past, I guess it'll be the fourth year, we do a live broadcast at CES as well. We don't have quite the prime real estate location that you guys do, where you guys have been for years, but we're kind of, you know, little by little, I guess for a better word, earning our stripes and, you know, year by year getting a better position. And I think we found ourselves a nice spot outside of North Hall for the second year in a row, which it's actually high, pretty high traffic area. And the planning we put into that thing is just over the top. Are you involved at all in the CES production?
I'm involved big time, man. I'm highly involved in the CES live production. This year, actually, I am not going to be there because my wife and I are expecting our second child. So he should be here any minute now, actually.
Oh, congratulations.
Really. Thank you very much.
So we could get your phone may ring and you may have to depart the scene. So
Yeah, so I'm off the hook for CES this year, but I do a lot of planning around the live streaming stuff and YouTube. So I handle all of our live streaming content. We use Livestream and YouTube to stream the show live. And those are great platforms, obviously. I handle all the bringing the encoders, setting them up, and being able to run ads and all that fun stuff that goes into the live show. And also curating the YouTube channel, making sure that, you know, all the videos that we produce at CES are in the right playlist, have correct links to all the reviews and all that stuff, you know, just kind of making the site look clean and giving everyone a really cool CES experience. You know, we want people to feel like they're there pretty much,
right?
Like, seeing all the action.
One of the challenges that we've had is, you know, we don't have this big, huge support crew at home. You know, we are talent producers, production, posting, everything. And one of our biggest challenges has always been is the, you know, we're live, and we used live stream last year as well. This year, I think we're going to probably pretty much strictly use YouTube. We haven't made a complete decision on that yet. But cool. One of the things that, you know, for us, the biggest challenge is, you know, we got it. I think we did 247 interviews last year, two floor teams. And then we have the studio, and we work on a 10 minute center where we have a new guest every 10 minutes. And that's a big challenge in making sure you don't end up with, you know, a lot of people coming in with, I guess, cell phone covers and that kind of stuff. So you have to, you know, that's a challenge in booking. But long story short, for us, we do everything live, and then we come home a post show and put most of the content up. And we've always thought that that hindered us a little bit. How do you guys coordinate that when you guys are you guys pre-writing a lot of stuff? And then when you have someone on live, you've got that ability to mesh that almost immediately? Or I've always kind of wondered about your guys' process behind the scenes. Can you go into that at all?
Well, basically, the CNET staff does not sleep the whole week at Vegas. They're up all night writing stories night. In terms of our publishing process, we bring a lot of our publishing tools with us. So we have this thing called the Video Robot, which will take all of our videos and then break them out into all the different formats that get syndicated to all the different places that all of our content goes. So we actually bring that stuff with us, and we bring IT with us to help us make sure that's all set up and working. And we can publish from CES, from our little war room back there. We can publish all of our videos and all of our blog posts as if we're in the office.
Right.
So it makes it very simple for us to get stuff up on, like stuff that could be timely, you know, like here's an exclusive. We have this guy showing us this product right now. We're going to get it up on the web within 10 minutes probably. So it's very helpful to have the team that we have out there every year and have all the tools that we need to publish all this stuff quickly and efficiently.
Yeah. And that's been one of our things too, is, you know, so last year we put a live blog up to help try to supplement the actual live content. But, you know, I think most folks that are creating media have no clue the actual undertaking it takes to do an event. You know, even if they did a small show, the logistics is huge, and, you know, just getting everything set up and making sure the flow is good.
Bandwidth costs a fortune there.
The bandwidth costs are down. There. Bandwidth costs are down this year.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, not a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they're down. They're down. At least for me, they're down $1,000. And, you know, when you're scraping every penny to make the show happen, it definitely is $1,000 is welcome when they lower the price a little bit. Cox is in there this year, so we'll see how they do from a bandwidth standpoint. So how many folks do you guys end up taking to that show?
I think last year we took maybe, I want to say, close to 100 people.
Wow. Yeah.
This year they're scaling it back considerably. You know, technology is getting to the point where we don't need that many people to run such a big show. And there's a lot of people at home that can write stories and get the scoop on things from home too. So this year we are scaling it back, but this is CNET Super Bowl. So they send the A team out there to get this done, you know?
Yeah. I think our team on the ground last year was 23. This year we'll have 20. I feel pretty proud of our little small team. We put out a lot but our, you know, our written stuff gets, you know, doesn't come out immediately. It takes a couple of weeks for us to get our written stuff out. And, you know, sometimes that impacts us, but over the long haul, I think we fare pretty, we did 32 million views on 247 videos last year. So, but we're, you know, we kind of have a little different distribution model too. So, but it worked out. It worked out well. I can't complain, but, you know, you guys,
that's great.
And hopefully this year, I know there was a little controversy last year. Hopefully that's way, way behind you guys.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking with my guys about doing some sort of an award process, but that's a huge, it's so, you have to try to really, it's hard work to do that right. So I don't know if we're going to do anything or not, but.
Yeah, it's hard.
It is.
I think some people are a little relieved that we don't have to do the award show.
Because it's just an extra production, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of time and effort, and you know, it's hard keeping secrets too, surrounded by millions of journalists for who's going to get the right awards.
Right,
like that, so.
Right.
And it's, and but yeah,
it's hard to pick the right ones too.
Exactly.
So on a day to day basis, and Rob, I'm sorry, I'm hogging the mic here.
It's okay.
On a day to day basis, then you know, what's your team makeup there in CNET? You know,
on a day to day. Well, I work with the CNET TV team, so I think there's about 20-25 of us who are producing videos and reviews and all sorts of news content for the site. And then we have obviously editorial, and then the guys, the engineers who actually build the site, and we're all on the sixth floor. So everyone's on the same floor. We're all working together. We all see each other every day. So it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of team cohesiveness. We all have a good time, which is key. You have to have a good time at work, especially when you're doing technology, because technology is fun, right?
Yeah.
Or it can be fun. It can make your life more fun.
You know, I've often told my audience I would do, you know, if we had the budget, we would grow this thing and we would do, you know, we would do this continuously. There would be every day, there would be a new show. And, but, you know, it's not, people take what everyone does these days for granted, but it's not cheap to do this good, you know, and that's, you know, there are production costs involved. But Rob, go ahead. I'm hogging the mic here.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, so are you guys finding that living in the podcast world and the YouTube world is a challenge? And how are you guys juggling that? Are you guys finding success on the YouTube side with your shows? Or is your consumption and distribution still really dominated by the whole podcast model?
Well, I think YouTube is actually dominating right now, because we're able to serve ads specifically to different franchises and shows on YouTube. And YouTube, you know, if something goes viral, if something takes off, it gets a ton of views. I mean, way more than our CNET TV channel could ever get. So that business model is working out really great. I mean, we launch a new show, it gets an advertiser, and then that advertiser can turn on ads for just that show on our YouTube channel. So every time someone goes to watch it, they get an ad impression, and that's countable ad. You know, it's something that they can actually count and keep track of over time, which is great. The podcast model is still going strong. There's a lot of fear that Feedburner is going to go away. Google doesn't really do anything to update it or anything. And it's also very hard to sell ads with the podcast model, or to get advertisers, because like if it's an audio only thing, then it has to be an ad that's read, and we like our shows to be evergreen so they can go forever without having ads attached to them. And so if there's an ad in a podcast and you have to record the ad, and then that lives in the podcast forever, so 5 years down the road, it still has that ad connected to it. So we're finding that YouTube is probably the easiest and fastest way to be most profitable with our content right now.
So you guys are actually afraid for Feedburner going away?
Yeah, I mean, there's other options out there, I'm sure. But I mean, that's how all of our podcasts are syndicated right now through iTunes and RSS. So if that goes away, then we're going to be scrambling to figure out what we're going to do next.
Oh man, it's I wear two hats. Obviously, I do this show, then I run the podcasting side of the business of Raw Voice, and man, we could only hope that Feedburner would go away. It's our number. believe it or not, it's our number one tech support issue. People have so many issues with it. It's slow. It's, you know, they haven't put money in the infrastructure. You know, there's just I can go on and on and on and on about the causes. It's going to be mayhem if they ever pull the plug, because a lot of people use it, getting their feeds readdressed. But, you know, we just keep telling people, own your own feed. Don't let Google have that feed. It's just, it is, and I truly believe it's going away. So
yeah.
No, so you guys on the inside, though, you've got to be feeding Feedburn or something. So you guys got to have master feeds.
Yeah, we do have master feeds. It's just cleaner and easier for us to use Feedburner, and you know it syndicates everywhere, and it goes to iTunes, and it looks pretty. It's easy for us to just set it up and then just leave it, and it doesn't really ever screw up for us. I mean, maybe once in 6 months the feed will get screwed up, and we'll have to go in and fix it or resync it or something. Mm. But for the most part, it's just set it up and just let it live, and all the shows go up in a timely manner. And you know, if there's any complaint, it's from the user saying, hey, the feed didn't update or something. And that's very rare.
Yeah.
So it really works out. And we are actually working on some new way of setting up CNET feeds, but we're just not, it's not ready to go live yet. So we probably will have some announcement in the next 6 months or so.
Well, if you guys need help on the feed side, we'd love to talk to you. So what we do, that's what the other business part does. That's what we do best. So, Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, Stephen, you had mentioned that one of the reasons that the kind of podcast piece is a more difficult model is because of the ads living in the content for a long time and they can't be changed out. So did you guys experiment at all with the dynamic ad insertion technology at all to help solve that problem? And if you did, I mean, what was your experience with that? I don't know if you could go into greater detail on that.
Well, we did maybe more than a year ago, we were using a service called PodTrack. I don't know if you guys are aware with PodTrack. Yeah. But it would take our audio feeds and it would redirect them to PodTrack so that they can measure, how many people downloaded our podcast and stuff like that. And then they would sponsor us based on a specific show or franchise or something. And we would be doing what I was saying is recording an ad and putting it in the beginning of the show. Then we'd have to record when that ad was in the show with PodTrack. And there would also be a mid-roll ad that would be in the center of the show as well. That model worked for a while, but it really wasn't profitable enough for us to keep it going. Hmm. It didn't produce that much money for the company. So we just got, and then also all those shows would have those ads on them forever. So we could never sponsor the show again later in the future. So it just didn't work out for us. And that's really the only one I've played with in the time that I've been at CNET. I mean, most of our ads are served through CNET TV. You know, we have it easily programmable where if you go watch a show, then an ad will pop up before the show starts. So that's basically been our model. And about a year ago, Rob, I know you're aware of this, but we killed all of our podcasts except for one of them. So they all got canceled. And, we just went with an all video model. So every piece of content that CNET produces pretty much now is video, except for two shows, the 404, which is a very long form video audio podcast, and CNET Update, which is like a 2 or 3 minute little daily news update. And that's very popular on audio. You know, but we don't serve that with like a PodTrack or any kind of thing. That's a newsletter that people can sign up for. And you get a daily newsletter email that has the audio portion in it. And then we could sell that. You know, we can have advertisers can buy space on that newsletter.
You know, Rob, this goes in the face of everything that we've been doing for a while because, you know, audio for us has been king. Audio is where all the money's at. You know, the video portion has been very, a small part where the audio part has been the big part of the financial mix. I'd be curious to see your guys' stats numbers. What we see is, and what we see on the audio side, and the reason that the ads residing in the content hasn't been a concern is, I would say 98 to maybe even as high as 99% of shows, they have this consumption content or a consumption model where it goes way up. And then it just does this over about a 2 week period to where it almost flatlines. There's very few, and I'll say this because we look at 16,000 shows. There's very few shows that have a you know, a model where there's a ongoing consumption of that content beyond about a couple of weeks. You know, quick and dirty tips, those folks have real good evergreen content. You know, they get a lot of views and, I mean, a lot of listens months out, even after the content's put up. But there's very, very, very few shows that have any type of a... And Rob disappeared on us. He'll call back in. So what we've seen is very... So for me, it's kind of surprising, you know, from a long tail standpoint. And if you guys have got this great evergreen content, that's great. And I understand the wanting to replace those ads to monetize it but for the majority of folks that we've ever worked with, including some pretty big names in the space that we, you know, we help, they, you know, after about that 2 weeks, they're like, okay, you know, the content's getting, we call it here in Hawaii, manimi, small number of downloads. I'm not worried about it. So, it's kind of curious that the video models, it's good that the video model is working for you guys. I'm just surprised you had a hard time with the audio, because that's where the majority of our, you know, when I'm writing checks, that's where the majority of our money goes to, as audio producers.
Yeah. You know, I think with CNET, just video, they just feel like video is king. And, you know, we have a lot of different shows. I mean, each day we probably produce 10 or more videos a day. And with audio podcasts, it would be maybe one audio podcast a day. And it would be also a very long podcast, which would be like 45 minutes or so. And and a lot of our audience just doesn't have the time or the patience to sit and listen to a long show that's going to have a couple ads in it. And so our model moved away from this long form content to let's do a short 3 minute video or 4 or 5 minute video and have all this great fancy pic, you know, B-roll footage of a product and stuff like that. And we could serve ads, two ads on it or whatever. And that seemed to work out a lot better for us.
Yeah. So I think that the type of content that you guys are mainly making now is very visual content. I mean, it's, I don't think that most of it would be very, very conducive to audio anyway. But you guys are still doing an audio podcast too. I think it's the 404 show.
Yeah, the 404 out of New York. They do an audio podcast, which is this, you know, it's a long form podcast. It's about 40, 45 minutes. And that has been one of CNET's, it's basically CNET's flagship podcast. And they've been doing it for a long time. I think they're almost to, they're closing in on 2,000 episodes. And they have a really, you know, very loyal audience, and you know, it seems to work for them. But they also publish it in video, and they also publish shorter pieces of their show. So they'll take like a little 2 minute, 3 minute section out of it and publish that in their feed along with YouTube and everywhere else. And then that, if they're sponsored, then that ad gets played. And those actually the short form. If you look at our YouTube, the 404 show doesn't do very well in views. But if they put up a short clip, then that clip explodes and does, you know, I don't know, 20, 30,000 views or something. So, you know, they are still trying to put up short form content, even though they're a long form show.
You know, Rob, you and I have been talking since we started doing this show about this, you know, why podcasters haven't been successful on YouTube. And the more and more we talk and just, you know, listen to the, you know, what Stephen has to say here is, I think it's just about the length. You know, people on YouTube are used to 2, 3 minutes, 4 minutes max, you know, and most podcasts are at least 20 minutes. And, you know, this show, we typically go 90 minutes. My personal show, I go 75. So, you know, who wants to watch for 90 minutes? No one has time to watch for 90 minutes.
Yeah, you don't want to look at a screen for that.
Yeah,
long.
Yeah.
Unless you're watching a movie.
Yeah.
You got popcorn and everything, but... Yeah. But in terms of audio listening, it's great because people go to the gym and they'll put on a podcast or go on a walk or, you know, do something. It's great for that. But if you're watching a video, you want it to be under 5 minutes, 3 minutes. You know, we like to try to keep all of our videos short. And all of our most popular videos are pretty short.
Yeah, I think in a general sense, I think video probably needs to be short because people... It really takes dedicated, you know, focus and attention to take in the content when it's video, right? So on the audio side, like you were saying, you can consume it in a lot of different places. And I, you know, since the type of content that CNET's producing is very visual, you're showing products, you're doing first looks and things like that of new gadgets and things. I think that's the perfect direction for what you guys are doing, and it sounds like that strategy is working.
Yeah, it's working, and we're launching new shows and constantly come up with new ideas. So you know, it's fun, and it's easy to produce short form content too. You know, as opposed to spending an hour, a couple hours in a studio doing a long podcast, it's just a little easier.
You know, so yeah. I guess that raises, I want to bring this back to CES question then. So for CES, you're doing the live. Obviously, yeah. There's stuff going on. So then when you guys cut those up and you take those, you have someone on and you bring a product on, what did you guys find is your sweet spot then for, you know, because people are watching live, they're watching it. But when you guys take that and put that up on the blog or put up on the website, is the same model apply? 3 to 5 minutes is what you're trying to stay within for the interview, or because
we'll do interviews live on the stage, and I mean they tend to go a little longer. I mean, yeah. We don't want to like rush people off the stage with their product,
right?
But I mean, some for the most part they're about 10 minutes or so. And then also we do a lot of first looks out on the floor. Like someone will be standing in front of a product saying, "Oh, here's this," and showing it off, and those things can be really short, 2 or 3 minutes long. But I think for CES, people our viewers are more interested in, you know, they kind of want to be there, you know, they want to be a part of it. So longer form seems to work at CES. It really depends. It's really product driven too. I mean, you can have, like, we had like a smart toothbrush last year, and I don't think that did very well because it's a smart toothbrush. But if we had, you know, some crazy Android phone that everybody wants, then that's going to do really well. CNET's very product driven.
Yeah, and for us, I call it the gift that keeps on giving. We have, you know, that's the only content that we have, at least that I do, that does, has evergreen. As a matter of fact, has incredible evergreen. So, yeah, that's, you know, and Rob, you know, I had always, Jeffrey and Andy and I, we'd always struggled with what's the sweet spot and, you know, and doing live interviews, because we know at the end we got to cut this thing up and put it up as web postings with all, you know, the background information and links and all that stuff. So, you know, that's why we went to 10-minute centers. And sometimes you want to get a guest off quicker. But every once in a while, you know, there's a product that I'm willing to run long just a little bit. But I start tapping my feet underneath the table when it gets to, you know, when the clock says 9:30, I'm like, we got to move, you know. And sometimes it's hard to rush someone off. They're so passionate. You know, they've spent, you know, some of these guys have maxed out their credit cards to be there.
Yeah, this is their life. They've been working on this product their whole life.
You know, and
they want to show it off.
And, you know, they're passionate about it. And those guys, you can usually give them a little more time because they're being energetic and exciting. But, you know, there's some companies can learn a lot by watching interviews like at your guys' interviews at CNET. There's things to do and not to do during a...
Oh man, yeah. Well, we also have the luxury of having a producer who has an earpiece and is saying, "Okay, this is boring. Let's end
move,
it.
Move it, I mean? Move it, move it, move it." I got a guy in the back that's doing. I can see him. You know, he's doing this. You know, wrap this guy up.
Yeah, so that's very helpful during CES too.
Oh man, yeah. You get sometimes some guys on there like, oh, and you know, within about 2 minutes, you're like. You know, you're almost like,
yeah. I've been there.
So Rob, going back to their format thing, don't you think then that, you know, good advice for people that are creating the content, if you want to be accessible as you know, podcaster, maybe go a little longer form, but if you're going to be putting stuff up on YouTube, maybe you need to, you know, chop that baby up into, you know, 5 segments or something.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good answer. But there's so many podcasters that are just dominant on the audio side, right?
Yeah.
Just isn't a fit there.
Yeah.
And that could be what the real answer is here, and why podcasters struggle on YouTube is that they're primarily a non-visual medium, and YouTube is such a visual medium.
you know, I was when I was doing the Chrome show, and really the only reason I quit doing it was because I didn't have enough time. Spent a lot of money for the domain, but my challenge was is, you know, I like to talk and I like to really get in deep, and sometimes you just better shut up, you know, and it's hard to do that. You know, so do you guys script most stuff out, or is it you guys kind of talk about how it's going to go? Do you been doing this long enough? You just kind of you mesh with the co-host you're working with, or if you're doing a standalone, you just kind of come up with your own.
Are you talking
format?
About CES?
No, I'm just
CES?
talking about your guys' normal content.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have like a meeting for like if we do an event, like we just did the Apple iPad event. A couple weeks ago, and we'll have a meeting before, and we build a document, and we have links to things we want to talk about, and we have a direction that we want to go, and sort of bullet points we want to hit, and we do plan it out pretty well. We don't just get into a room and start talking.
Right.
We do have meetings and figure out how we're going to do it so we can present a cohesive experience for the users, you know.
So like CNET on cars, though, how much planning goes into doing that spot that you do?
CNET on cars is a very big endeavor, and that takes a lot of producers, a lot of camera guys. So they are planning shows well far in advance.
Right.
And Brian Cooley, I don't necessarily think that he writes scripts. He has the script in his head.
Right.
Like he'll come on the camera and he'll know what he wants to talk about. He's the total an amazing expert on cars. It's incredible. But he'll come on camera and he'll just know what to say. Mm-hmm. And he'll have an idea in his head and script it out. But in terms of planning and where they're going to shoot and what cars are going to talk about and an overall outline of the show, that there is a lot of planning that goes into that.
Rob, don't you think most guys that are doing this are, you know, they may just have some talking points. They don't do a lot of planning. You know, this show, what do we plan? Stephen, I looked you up on Twitter. I read through about the last 2 weeks of your post. I went and looked at some of your guys' stuff online, stuff. Wikipedia, you know, all that stuff. That's, you know, that's my show prep really for, you know, for doing this show. And, you know, so we kind of freelance it, but I think we can afford to do that. But I don't think a lot of folks that are creating content have the luxury of producing, you know, really laying out a strict format.
Yeah. Well, and also I noticed when CNET made their cutover, you know, back when they, you know, over a year ago now, they cut back on their podcasts. They also simultaneously, from what I saw, made a big shift in their production quality of the video shows that they were doing as well. I mean, it became overnight, it became the same kind of content the same kind of content quality that you would see on broadcast television. And right. I think being part of CBS, certainly I could see that synergy really starting to take effect with that. You know, Stephen, if you want to comment on that, that'd be great.
Yeah. You know, after the podcast ended, there was a lot of empty space to fill. So CNET had the idea, let's try to make some broadcast quality TV shows. And we did that with Always On with Molly Wood, which is very highly produced show. It looked beautiful. Like cameras were top notch. The whole production of that show was amazing. They hired maybe another 10 extra people to help produce that show. And the same with CNET on cars. You know, we got really great video editors and shooters to produce the show. So CNET is, you know, we are trying to make stuff that could be on television. We would love to be on television. We're everywhere else except television. I mean, we are on television occasionally. But that is, I'm glad you noticed that our production quality went up because we are trying to do that. We are putting money into new cameras, new equipment. We are trying to make our stuff look better than everybody else's. So that is something we are doing.
So did that, translate into much higher viewership numbers compared to what you guys had in your podcast side?
I definitely believe that the numbers are far better in terms of video than the podcasts. We had Car Tech podcasts. We had a Dialed In podcast, which is about phones. And the podcasts were doing good. They just, you know, they just weren't through the roof. You know what I mean? Then we brought these new TV shows on, these new video shows. then everything just skyrocketed. And we also came up with this new model of, I know we did away with the long form podcast, but these new shows are broadcast quality and they're also broadcast length. So CNET on Cars is about a 20 or 30 minute show, and same with Always On. But another thing that they were able to do was they would publish those shows in their full, you know, the full show, the full length show, but then they'd also cut all the segments out and republish those at a later time. So maybe someone didn't want to sit down and watch the entire 20 minute episode, but they were interested about this one segment in the show. So we have been doing that as a new model where we'll release an entire show, but then later, a couple days later, we'll release all the little pieces of it too. And then those are all connected to the same franchise, and they get to serve the same ads as the main show does. So that's been a new thing that we've been doing that's been helping out as well.
You know, so is that to try and get content that was more compatible with the YouTube side, and then also having this more complete show for the download model with RSS, and then also making a show that may be compatible with some cable channel that CBS owns?
That's exactly correct. I mean, we can have the full length show on a CBS TV channel. But then we also have all the little pieces on YouTube that will probably do really great numbers because they're shorter little chunks of the show. Maybe someone's more interested in seeing the top five cars that Brian Cooley does a segment in CNET on Cars. It's top five. He always used to do the top five thing, but he'll do like top five this about cars, or top five older cars from before the 70s, or top five new technologies for saving gas. And maybe someone just wants to see that, but they don't want to see the other segment that's a review of a car or something. You know? So that seems to help a lot. And with Always On, what we did was each segment was even broken into a different feed. So every, like, Molly would do torture tests. So we had an RSS and iTunes feed for just her torture tests. And then she had another segment that was future technology. So then we had an external RSS feed for all the future technology segments, so people could subscribe to specific segments from each show if that's all they were interested in. So that was another really cool model that we were trying out.
Yeah. So back when you guys closed down your podcast shows per se, when you were referring to your shows, because if I back up and I look at the big picture of the transition that you guys made, was it's not that you guys got out of podcasting necessarily. It's just you guys got out of the traditional podcast content model. So you guys were looking at podcasts as a term, right, that would be more applicable to the type of content that you were producing, not necessarily the distribution medium that podcasts uses, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're using the same podcast. We're podcasters. All of our shows are syndicated through podcasts. But we just got out of the long form audio podcast. That's what we're shifting our focus from long form audio to short form video. Is really what CNET was trying to do.
Yeah, and I know that back when you guys announced that, I think that the podcast community misinterpreted that. CNET was shutting down all their podcasts. It was actually the opposite of that.
No, we're building them up, actually. We're making more, and they're shorter and easier to consume. That's all we were doing. And it was a cool transition, I think.
Yeah, and also just upgraded the quality of it. I mean, if you look at the competition out there and, you know, like the Verge and these other kind of technology sites, you know, Twit, and they all have really up the game when it comes to content production, you know, the video quality of those shows. And I know you guys kind of somewhat led the charge on that because you guys were doing it at a much higher quality than a lot of the other kind of technology sites out there, and really took it to a new level and really raised the bar.
Yeah, I mean, all our shows are HD, and we try to make them as beautiful as we can, and you know, who's to say we won't go to 4K soon? You know, who knows?
You know, Rob, the challenge that, you know, and it's one of the challenges that we have, and I, you know, the reason I keep coming back because I see these parallels of things that we've done and we've struggled with, is that you know, like this show. You know, I don't have any fancy intros, no big bumpers, no fly-ins. You know, I could do it. You know, I got a TriCaster here that's fully capable of doing all that fancy stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, the you have to, you know, you have to have the right people to be able to build that stuff. You know, I like doing this, but from the creative standpoint, I kind of know in my head what I want, but putting that to action is a whole different thing. So I think there's a huge, huge, huge marketplace now for guys that are good at doing these intros, doing the graphics, doing the things that really up the game. I think there's a huge market for people that offer those services. The challenge that folks like me has is if I reach out to someone like that, they send me a proposal, it's 10 grand, you know, and that's a deal killer from a budget standpoint. I understand people need to get paid and it's expensive to do the creative, but, and over time, maybe the tools will get better. And actually tools are really good now to be able to, for an average guy to make a better intro, but it's tough having those nice, fancy overlaid graphics and doing them right, and the music, and making sure it's, you know, copyright free, and all that stuff that goes into that.
We have an in-house,
in-house
team, and myself and another guy, Chris Pavey, who's a producer for CNET. We both produce a lot of the music that you hear on CNET.
Wow.
So, and we do have we have other music that we use that's free for CNET to use, that we have licensed and everything. But me and another guy, we produce a lot of the music they hear on CNET, on Cars, Always On, Googleicious. So we have a luxury of having, you know, free music to use. And we also have an in-house graphics person who is amazingly talented, Viva. Viva is extremely talented. So we're spoiled. We're spoiled.
But I think you just take these lessons that these guys have, you know, the standard applications of good videography and stuff that's been done by the news folks for years. I've been testing a Chromacast, and most people are like, what is that? But I've been testing a Chromacast system here that's, a lot less expensive. Normally a good Chromacast system's, six figures, you know, is what you're going to spend for that. And, you know, you go a little lower, it's 10K. This is actually one that does a 100K job for 2K. So, you know, the tool pricing is coming down, but still even $2,000, most people that are creating video content don't have that kind of money to throw at something like that. But, if you want something that's going to key and come into the video and overlay and all that stuff, you got to spend the money, but it'll pay off in the end.
Yeah, TriCasters are not cheap, that's for sure.
No, not at all. But you know, with Wirecast and stuff like that, there's other solutions.
I played with Wirecast a little bit, and it seems really cool. And YouTube just did an update where they changed all their. I don't know if you noticed when you're starting your stream now, but they've completely retooled their streaming tools. And now you can insert advertisements. Yeah. There's a button in insert advertisements and a button that will see different, what is it called? When it sees a different color and then it'll turn ad. I forget what that's called. But yeah, I mean, YouTube and Ustream and Livestream are all getting into this and building new software tools so that people can just switch on their computer and put up graphics and roll ads on the fly. And I think that's really cool for independent people.
I think it's awesome that YouTube has opened up, I think you have to have like 100 followers or something like now to be able to do live. So, but you know, I look at the live part and I was spending a lot of money with a variety of other companies to do number one, I was running my own streaming server. I quit using Ustream because they kept dropping diaper ads on tech content. But in the live stream, folks have been great. So, you know, there's options, but it'll be curious to see where YouTube takes this live platform. I think they're still trying to figure out the scale.
It is the new system that they have, the new interface is tricky, right? It's not very user friendly. I had to sit there and hack with it to figure it out for a while, but I mean, it's great that they are thinking about it and they want people to be empowered to do all this kind of stuff. So that is a good thing.
The one thing that they could do that I wish YouTube would do a lot better is they should have clicked alive. You hit start streaming.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There should be another button there that sends the live video to the front page of your YouTube page. Now you have to go through like two or three steps to actually get it to be live on the front of your actual page.
I haven't even figured that out. If you could help me figure that out. I don't know how that works yet.
Okay,
I see that button. It pops up. It says promote your stream on the front page. I hit the button and it takes me to the upload, or it takes me to the upload page or something. Then I don't know what to do after.
You
got to
make it a favorite. It's not conducive. It should just be a single click and it's live. And then when the live's over, it replaces it with your. It's not
that's
easy.
How it used to be. It was like that before, but I guess they haven't figured that out. I mean, YouTube changes something every day. I manage CNET's YouTube channel, and I'll come in the morning and I'll turn it on, and something is different every day, and it drives me nuts.
Well, I think the key is there's a little thing that says send feedback. You just keep sending feedback.
Yeah, I've done that. goes into a black hole, I believe.
I think what you guys have got the juice, so you need to call somebody over there and say, hey. Sometimes what it takes, there was something that was driving me crazy on live stream, and I emailed Max. I said, listen, this is stupid. Why are you guys doing this? And, and he looked at it and he wrote me back. He says, yeah, that is kind of dumb. And a couple of weeks later, it changed. So sometimes you know, the smaller companies you can get direct access to YouTube. It's just this big black hole. You don't know who's running what over there.
That's great. I'm totally happy Max got back to you, man. He's a really cool guy.
He's busy guy, And
so super busy.
I heard they just signed some big deal with a sports network. I don't know if that's public knowledge.
I've been hearing rumblings of that too. Yeah.
Yeah,
but they're doing big things at live stream, man. CNET is all about live stream. That is our partner, and they are helping us at CES, and they are fantastic.
Yeah. So, Rob, from the looks of it, what everyone thought was an abandonment actually turns out to be a strategic change that, number one, part of it was financially driven. And I think the move that they made was for their content was smart, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it was. I definitely think that the quality, jump that they made really, really, I think, changed the overall kind of presentation of the brand too. I think it was really kind of an interesting move, and I think so Stephen, can you tell us kind of where do you see the next frontier in this stuff? What's the next big jump? Is it 4K or is it something else? Is there anything else that you can share with us about what the thinking is in the kind of new media space? Is the whole kind of video podcasting space, you think, gonna drift away and disappear, or what's the next big frontier that you think is coming?
It's hard to say. I do believe everything's gonna go to 4K soon. I know friends of mine are already editing video in 4K for music videos and stuff like that. In terms of for CNET, our goal right now is to just keep doing what we're doing. We're going to keep producing really good quality video content for everybody. But one thing that we've done in the last year is we started our interactive video player, which only works on CNET. It works on a few platforms, actually, but currently it works best on CNET. So what we're able to do is we can program a show. We produce a show, and then we can program it where as we're talking about a product or a review, then a link will pop up next to your player. So if you go look at any CNET video on CNET TV and you look at the interactive player, you start watching a show like my show Crave that I produce every week on Fridays. It has a bunch of news stories in it, right? So as we're watching the show, link will pop up. You can see it right there on the right side of the show.
I was going to bring up Crave.
Cool. So as I'm talking about a different story, a new story that CNET has written, then a link will pop up on the right side, and that is a link that you could go click to and go, maybe it's a story that you want to hear more about or read more about. You can click on that link and then go read more about it in depth at the CNET story, actually. So if you let the video play, you'll see one pop up after the intro here. my cheesy intro that I do.
Yeah, we got to be careful. We got to be careful because YouTube is pretty good at detecting other stuff here, and won't let.
Oh,
this,
really?
Yeah, they'll say, "Oh, you're
see, that, see how the Lady Gaga
yeah, and I'm gonna
so we're doing this with all of our shows where we're programming links into the shows that go back to the news story that was written by CNET.
Yeah.
So it's a completely interactive experience. And we also have this with the mobile app. So you could be watching a CNET video on your TV, and on the mobile app, you can have it paired to your television. And on your mobile app, those links will pop up on your mobile app as you're watching the show. So, oh, maybe I want to read more about Lady Gaga going to space. We can click on that and go there. It also works for polls, so we could take polls of the community, say, hey, what Apple product do you like the best, or you know, some question that we have, and people can vote in that interactive player. They can vote thumbs up, thumbs down, and then there's also, you know, we can make games out of it and stuff like that. So that's a new thing that we've been doing the last year that has really helped us to get clicks going back to our review pages, back to our news stories, and we think it's going to really help CNET just, you know, take over the second screen realm in the next year or so. That's like a new thing we've been doing. That's really cool.
You know, Rob, about a year and a half ago, we put something called MetaMarks inside PowerPress. And it's basically, you can call out links to content, surveys, little pop-up windows, that kind of stuff. And the challenge has been figuring out the best way to display that. And I think what they've done here is they've implemented what I've always thought is the right way to do it. And what I like about this, if you look at the screen here, and let's see if I can blow this up so that the folks who are watching can see. Let me see if I can do this. Let me make sure I'm on the right page. They've got right on the video, they've got share, download, subscribe. I don't know if you guys can, Rob, if you can see that. And then over here is where this interactive stuff is. I think this is brilliant.
And yeah, it's been a really cool thing for us.
And I'm surprised people haven't stole this yet. Stole this idea. I think it's really, really, really smart. Because the challenge, and the thing is, you have to have the page space to do it. And they made it so you could do the page space. And what I also like is when you click on it, it just opens up a new tab. They don't leave, which is critical.
We don't want people to leave. And it pauses the video too. We don't want people to leave the video. We want them to come back to the video and keep watching.
I think this is brilliant. I think what you guys have done here is smart. I don't know why isn't this on YouTube already? Why is this not?
That's what we're hoping that we can port this technology, this interactive screen to all of our syndicated places. You know, we'd love it to be able to work on YouTube. We'd love it to work on AOL, Roku, everywhere.
Yeah.
But you know, right now it's only on CNET TV. It does work a couple of places, and with our CNET TV app, you can use it, but it would be great if it was everywhere. If everyone had this, I mean, it would be amazing.
You know, we'd pitched a bunch of companies saying, hey, we're, you know, and the challenge that we were having was, okay, we've got the infrastructure. We're putting the MetaMarks in. We're letting the content creators put this, like the link to Lady Gaga, in the actual, and we basically embedded it as an item in the RSS feed so that when it went to another platform, they knew the item calls would be there and they would know when to put up the link and stuff. But trying to talk companies into implementing exactly what you guys want at Roku and all the other platforms, it's like you're talking to a stone wall sometimes. It just drives me in. But from a user standpoint, this makes so much sense to me. You know, it really... You know, and we've tried to figure out, okay, how do we get this implemented? And I think maybe we can help. Maybe we'll just start, and we're gonna have to make our own player that will support it. And if enough of us do it,
that's what we did. We just built our own player.
But I think
Todd, it gets back to standards, right? The industry doesn't really come together and try and move the goalposts back, you know, and move it forward. to establish standards that can be shared across all of the experiences, because everybody's competing with each other and everybody wants to own their piece instead of sharing a strategy to further everybody, right?
But so. Rob, from a let's think about just from a channel standpoint, you know, if Roku and Chromecast and all these other folks, if they understood that this would mean more viewer hours, more people using their product, you know, we're going to create the content. We're going to do, putting those links in, that takes time. You have to be in the right spot. You got to get the link. It's editing. Yep. It, you know, that is not something that, you know, it's an extra hour or two of post-production, you know? And so if we do the work, you would think that these, I hate to say it, these knuckleheads would go and say, man, we got this great metadata here that goes along with this video. But you know, they don't want someone that they don't want to see that video having clicked and go load a CNET page. They want them to stay in their infrastructure. They don't want them to leave. So that's part of the challenge. But in order for us to make money, and you know, we were talking with a partner, a new partner, last week, and the guys basically said, and I can say this publicly, he says, I want a cut of the advertising revenue that's in your podcast or in your channel that's going to be in our system. So I basically did a math thing. I'm like, okay, here is the percentage of the views and listens we think your channel is going to get in our content. And I said, this would be on an average show, your percentage of revenue. And I said, is it worth it to go through 6 months of lawyering to make this deal so that, you know, I write you a check every month that lucky if it's three figures, you know, and, you know, and I said, until your platform can bump the needle, and in order to bump the needle, you're going to have me front and center. I'm not going to be buried in a sub menu of 25 other tech categories or, you know, content categories. I said, you know, the chance of someone finding me is so we've made some suggestions to them and said, hey, here's the way we can really make this work. And we've suggested this to other groups before and they've all been like, oh, we don't want to do that. And it just, to me, there's such a golden opportunity for so many platforms to, in other words, there could be some good revenue made for everybody.
Oh yeah.
But,
well, Todd, it is difficult for aggregator or distribution platforms to actually make money on free, you know, available content. It's difficult, and I think it's held back podcasting too, to a certain extent, is that the aggregators and the companies that make the software, you know, Apple, Microsoft, all those, there's no revenue model around podcasting, so it's difficult for them to keep investing in it and adding features and functionality it's a tough deal.
There's no revenue until they give it some, you know. The thing is, it's something that's going to develop over time. And if third parties would start, you know, CNET, you got a great name. You guys don't have a problem with getting distribution. That's not an issue. You know, people want the CNET content everywhere. Yep. So it's a smaller content creators. It's like, you know, me and the Tech Podcast Network, it's hard for us to, you know, we have to prove ourselves from a content standpoint in order to get on the platform. So, you know, I think it'll get better in time. But you know what? At this point, quite honestly, as Steven said earlier, we're everywhere except for TV. And I think at some point, and we're already starting to see it, the TV folks are going to start saying, maybe we need to start courting these folks a little bit more. Our business is going to be impacted. And maybe we're still maybe 10 years away from that. But
I mean, is TV even, it's all going to go online eventually.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter that much.
And what it is, it's going to end up being as if Apple decides to make an Apple TV that's integrated with regular TV, or if someone else comes out with an experience that allows our content to reside equally next to CNN and Fox and, you know, ESPN. And, you know, if it's right there next, if I favorited Tech Podcast, I could be on that menu system. that's where the playing field will be completely leveled. But you know, how long is that going to take?
Yeah, you know, YouTube is sort of doing the interactive player thing now with in-video programming.
Right.
It's very similar. It's a little pop-up that comes up on the bottom of the screen, and you can click it and go watch another video. Every day I program a CNET show that we want to, you know, promote. And they, if YouTube already, and YouTube's also going to build in the technology for annotations that you could use on mobile also. So you know how you could click on an annotation, it'll take you to a playlist or right. something on YouTube. They're going to build it into mobile eventually. So if you're watching on your phone, you could click that annotation. They already do it with the skip this ad thing after right. 5 seconds. They do that. So, I mean, why couldn't they do it? I mean,
yeah.
it would be easy to, if they already have the technology to do it, why can't they just implement that for everyone so you can have links throughout your shows on YouTube? I think that'd be great.
And even if the YouTube didn't want us to leave the property, then make it so our content pops up in an iframe or something. So it's, you know, it's you know, even, yeah. if it, you know, and I know some people are going to be freak out about that, but I would be happy to be able to send them to the source article or the source content within the show. It just makes it a much, much better. And this is where long format would be successful on YouTube because people would be interactive all the yeah. time, you know. And that's where maybe, you know, I don't think long format will be successful on YouTube until there's that type of, you know, exactly what you guys have done on CNET, some more type of interactivity.
Yeah, YouTube yeah, does let you link out to external sites other than YouTube, but you have to be a partner.
Right.
And you have to put a code into the header of your website. So I did that for CNET. I worked with some engineers. And we put a YouTube code that YouTube provided us into the header of CNET.com. So then that lets us link back to CNET.com articles.
Hmm.
So we do have the ability to do that. So every review video that we have on our YouTube channel, at the end of the video, if you like watching the video, if you like the product, you want to read more about the article or right. the review, I do have the option where you could click back to the review and it'll take you to CNET.com. But only CNET.com, like I can't send you anywhere else. It has to be a CNET.com, has to be in the URL. And it can't have a www before it. It can't have a reviews.CNET.com before it. It has to just be CNET.com. So they do give you that option now, but it's, you know, it takes a lot of time to set up. And a lot of people just turn off those annotations when the video starts. If they see an annotation right away, and they're like, oh, that thing's in my way. I don't want to look at it. They'll turn it off. So I've sort of adopted this model of saving the annotations for late in the video. So that way we get the video view, the person watches the whole video, and then I'm giving them options at the end of the video. Oh yeah, I did like that review. I want to go see this other review, or I want to go to the full review on CNET, or I want to see a playlist about more products that are similar to this product I just watched.
Yeah. Hey, one thing I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, and maybe you can give, you know, a short 2 or 3 minute lesson to, you know, folks out there doing video. You know, something I've been negligent on my own channel is really the management of the playlist. And, you know, it sounds to me from the beginning of this discussion today, you were talking about that was one of your big jobs during CES, as you're managing the playlist and everything going on yeah. YouTube. Can you give any tips to folks on some best practices to use on YouTube?
In terms of playlists or yeah, just YouTube
playlist
in general?
And playlist and, you know, management or some things that maybe people can do just to, you know, just a general tip as well.
Well, I always like to keep the playlists really short. So I keep them about 10 videos long, which would be maybe about 20, 30 minutes. But I figure people aren't going to sit there and watch a playlist that is a million videos. They would be more inclined to sit and hit play on a playlist that's 20 minutes long. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yep.
So I like to keep all the playlists short. I also try to keep everything fresh daily. Like at the end of the day, I'll go through and tweak everything on the YouTube channel. I'm also putting links back to the review or to the product at the top of the description. That's something I've found that's been very effective, because a lot of people put the link, they'll have the description and they'll say everything about the product or whatever they're talking about. And then the link will be at the bottom.
Right.
But then that link is hidden.
Yep.
When you go to the video page and you have to see show description to see the whole description, and then you get that link. So I'm a big advocate of putting the link in the top of the description. So even if you're looking on mobile, if you're looking on your cell phone or something, that link is right there at the top of the YouTube video, and you might click it and go to the review channel. And another thing I do is, like I said, put annotations at the end of the video as opposed to the beginning, because everyone likes to turn them off. They have analytics on annotations, and if you go look at the analytics, it's like 90% turn it off right at the beginning. But if you leave the annotations at the end, then there's maybe like 20% who will click on the annotation and go somewhere else, because it's been off the whole video, and then all of a sudden it pops up, and they're more likely to click it if it's the end of the video. Another thing is the images, I believe, are super important on YouTube, because if you have a crappy picture of some product or, you know, something boring, it's not going to do great. It has to be colorful, well-lit, bright, just a beautiful picture, I think, is a big thing on YouTube, because people are going to see the image and they're going to go, oh, yeah, that looks interesting. I'm going to click on that. I mean, the image is everything. And the title, I always tell everyone at CNET, please put the product in the title, because, you know, people aren't going to know what it is. Like, mm-hmm. It could be a headline that says, this is a great tablet at a great price, but no one knows what tablet you're talking about. You know what I mean? So I'm very big on putting the product title in the, at the very top of the title. And, you know, just making it look as clean as possible. And before I started working on the CNET YouTube channel, videos are just going there, and no one was curating or doing anything. I just kind of started doing it on my own because I saw pictures of, you know, like a thumbnail would get auto-generated and it would be like someone with their eyes closed or, you know, it just kind of looks silly. So I quickly found that putting a great image in there, it really influences a lot of clicks on the video.
You know, there's like, bam, three things right there for me that that were like, you know, that's it's just, I think it just takes doing it to know what works and what doesn't work. So, you know, it's, you know, putting the link at the beginning of the description. It's always pissed me off because I've always had this little nice write up. I put the link and then I said, man, no one's going to see that. And, you know, so, you know, the blogger in you says, put the link after the write up, but no, don't do that, obviously.
Yeah, it just looks better too. I mean, you see the link, right? That's the first thing you see is the link, and you're like, okay, maybe I'll click that. I just think it's a much more effective way to set up your descriptions.
Do you do a file shortener on those so they're not all gaudy and 10 feet long?
Yeah. Yeah, I use Bitly, because Bitly is really cool because it actually puts cnet.com in the URL.
Oh, because you guys have, so, yeah.
Yeah, we have, I don't know, before I came there, before I started working at CNET, something, they did something magic, and every time you put a bit.ly link in, it says cnet.co, and then all the little code at the end, you know?
Right.
So I do shorten those, but if it's a short URL on CNET, like, you know, if it's a short URL that actually has, like, we have a holiday tech gift guide right now, and the URL is cnet.com/holidaytechgiftguide. So I'll just put that in the top of the URL because people will look at that and go, oh, okay, I know exactly what that is. You know what I mean?
And it may help you a little bit with the SEO too. So
yeah, exactly. That's another thing. Keywords are very important, and we're learning to have less keywords than to have more. It seems like if you're a lot more specific with your keywords, you get a lot more hits. And if there's just a ton of stuff in there, it kind of gets lost in the shuffle, I believe. So we have been focusing on doing less keywords that are more specific to the product, as opposed to just throwing as many keywords in as we can as possible.
Is this, would you say the sweet spot 6, 7, 8, 9, 10?
It's hard to say. I mean, it really depends on the product. But you know, if it's like an Android phone, it would be like, or if it's in Galaxy S. Four something, Galaxy S4 and Android, and, you know, just keep it real simple. Yep. Not go crazy, not go smartphone, you know,
right?
We just don't go crazy. We try to keep it real simple.
This is good stuff.
So is there a tool in the YouTube kind of tool set that will allow you to find out what keywords are getting the most action and traffic, so you can kind of prioritize.
Yeah.
I know that strategy's been around for a long time with search engine optimization. So is that also there with YouTube?
Yeah, they just built it recently, within the last 6 months, I believe, and it is a keyword tool that will allow you to see what keywords are getting hit the most. So what people are searching on YouTube the most, it'll tell you what keywords in your videos are getting hit the most, which is really key. So if you see like something like if you see a keyword is getting clicked on a lot, then you maybe want to put that keyword in every video that's associated with the product. And it also gives you the ability to remove keywords over all your videos. So you could select a keyword and remove it, and it'll take it out of the keywords list for all your videos on your YouTube channel, which is extremely helpful.
How's the G+ integration been for you guys?
We hate it. We don't want to use it at all. We don't want it.
Really? So you think it's a detriment?
It's just complicated. It takes a million buttons and clicks and settings to get it right. We currently do not have our CNET channel connected to our Google Plus channel. And Google Plus is trying to force this on everybody. Yeah. So it actually took everyone's images offline. Yep. If you go and look at people's YouTube channels, their images are offline because it connected them with a Google Plus page that doesn't exist.
Yep.
And, you know, I have a meeting with the YouTube people once a month, and they're trying to push us to do this, but everyone is pushing back. We're just saying it's not working. It's too complicated. And until they streamline it, then maybe. But we already had a G+ channel that was separate from our YouTube channel. And it's, you know, it's already being managed that way. So we want to keep it that way for now. I mean, if they build it in a way where they can marry each other and work together easier, then maybe we'll do that in the future. But for now, we're staying away from that.
The challenge I had is they pushed and they pushed and they pushed. And I really should have researched a little more of the ramifications before I agreed. You know, it'd be nice. And so now when I manage, so now my YouTube channel is, I'm just pissed, just like you guys. It's not right. But now it's a parallel link to a Google Plus page.
Yeah.
And that page is not my primary place where people hang out. You know, it's not where everyone is. And so I wanted the ability to link it to the right page on Google Plus. I didn't want to do this.
Share your frustration, man.
And, you know, and I'm just smacking my head because, my God, I spent all this time building up this community and I got everyone in there, and now it's not even tied to the YouTube page. So
they tied it to another Google Plus page, right? That has nobody there.
So now what I'm trying to do is I'm saying, okay, guys, go over there, please.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm asking them to follow another page on Google Plus, and it just pisses people off. Why are you making me go over here? We've got this. And, you know, so you're trying to do the shift because you're trying to keep things aligned. They need it. And then they've changed the comment stuff up on YouTube. Now when there's a comment, it comes into Google.
That is a nightmare. So all of our comments are going to this, like Google Plus did build a page for our CNET channel, which you do not want. So I have to figure out how to disconnect it, right? And there are all these comments going to that page somehow, right? That I'm seeing that little red number pop up there, and I'm like, where is that all going? And I don't want it there. You know what I mean? It's just kind of annoying me.
In a corporate situation, CNET's got more stuff going on than just the video. So, you know,
and our Google Plus page is huge. I mean, we have tons of people already interacting there. So now they're sending them to another place where there's nobody and people are getting confused. So now it's just all getting, you know, it's getting fragmented and it's getting messy.
Well,
When you meet with them next time,
please tell them that there's a bunch of us.
We did last time. Everyone had a complaint last time. It's funny.
So what is their response? Are they just like, sorry?
They want to know what the problems are, and they're willing to work with us and fix it. I mean, there is a girl on the GameSpot team who is a YouTube genius, and she has made so many suggestions to YouTube that they have implemented directly within a few days of her saying, you guys should do this. And they're like, you know what? That's a great idea. We're going to do that. And, you know, so they do listen to what we have to say. They do listen to the problems people have. But I don't think sending that email like you were talking about earlier, the complaint department is the way to do it. You got to get someone on the phone and say, hey, this is causing us a problem.
Yeah, Todd here in Hawaii calling them up and say, yo, knuckleheads, I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, it's not working.
Especially when and as Rob and I've talked, 99.999% of this audience is, not on YouTube. It's getting the content somewhere else, you know. I always, people, you know, the funny thing is I'm talking to advertisers all the time. They're like, they start doing some due diligence. They say, well, you don't hardly have any traffic on YouTube. And I'm like, yeah, it's all on the podcast side. And here's our statistic numbers on that. And, well, why is the number so low? So they start questioning, you know, be like, you don't have high numbers on YouTube. Are you really? And then you have to go through this whole process. So that's one of the reasons why one of the many reasons we launched our new certified statistics product this past year was to provide a third party verification of statistics data so that when content creators are having these questions come up with media buyers, they can say, hey, listen, we got this independent company, Raw Voice. They do our certification on our podcast stats. Here's our spreadsheet. And if you need to confirm with them, you can. But, you know, that only covers the downloadable media portion of it. It doesn't cover, you know, it doesn't cover the YouTube stats or anything like that. But, it is an interesting time in the space for sure.
I know they're changing something. Like I said, every day something changes on YouTube. And just the other day they changed all the comments. So that's a whole new thing. Yeah. And that's actually a welcomed thing because we won't get all these jerks saying horrible things at the top of our, you know, when everyone likes someone's horrible comment, it goes up to the very top. So when you go to the video page and you're watching the video, then at the very top, there's this guy who said, this guy is ugly and I hate him. And then 50 people liked it. You know what I mean? Yep. So I'm happy that that is the thing of the past.
So from a podcasting standpoint, though, you say that YouTube right now is winning.
YouTube is winning.
Is winning. For you guys, it's winning. And I can see why. Rob, don't you agree? Seeing them with, you know, with their short-term video, why that YouTube would be winning?
Well, and I think that they've seen that as changed their content to fit with the new landscape, and they're making content that I think would do well on YouTube, but will also do well on the podcast side too. So they are one of the few that's able to, you know, kind of navigate both worlds and do it successfully. And I think they are a model for what probably more content providers should probably think about trying to do if they are a serious content provider.
You know, it's a conversation we have here at least every week, Stephen, is that it's this ongoing thing where, you know, we've got podcasters that I know that are widely successful. They have hundreds of thousands of people that are subscribed to their shows and they have no YouTube. Basically, no one follows them on YouTube. And there's very, very few, and you guys, like Rob said, are the exception. There are very few that have been able to do both equally well. And it's concerning, and it's been one of those mysteries. But I think over time, like we said earlier, I think we started to narrow down a little bit on why.
Close, but I'm not sure that we've got it totally figured out. So I think we need to just keep talking about it more.
Well, it's just like today, you know, it's little by little, the jigsaw puzzle comes together. Right. And there's a reason.
Right.
And maybe we were too stupid to see it to begin with. Maybe we should have automatically said, okay, hey, YouTube's 3 to 5 minutes and that's where the sweet spot is. And if you don't do 3 to 5, tough, you're not going to be successful on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, Todd, we're both a couple of knuckleheads, so it takes a few months for us to get it.
Well, that's true. We are. Oh boy, funny. So
yeah.
Well, very, very cool. We've been at this hour 23. Rob, haven't gotten a response back from the guest that I had suggested. We thought we should have. I'm hoping he'll respond here in the next couple of days. Have you got any hot leads for someone for next week? Are we still on the search?
Oh yeah, I've got a guest for next week for us. I got Daniel Rubio, who runs WP Central and Tech Nation.
Oh, okay.
So they're a network podcaster that has been around for a very long time.
Well, that's cool. So I will amend my email to say, well, let's look at the calendar here. So next week will be the 16th. When you get into the 23rd, will probably be the last show of November, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we got.
Yeah, exactly. So we're looking at November 30th probably for the next show, right?
Well, let's see. Thanksgiving is on the 28th, so probably that.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go ahead and do a show on the 23rd then.
Yeah, yeah. And then the follow-on show will be the following week on the 7th, the Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th. So
okay,
that'll work from a planning standpoint. But,
yeah.
Yeah, very cool what you guys are doing over at CNET. Too bad. I know that your wife's getting ready to, this is your first child, is it? Is that correct? Is that
my second, actually.
Your second. So, yeah, so you've been through this before. I don't have to give you any advice. You know what's coming.
man, two is going to be a whole different thing.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm out of the diaper situation, but I'm getting close. I'm getting close to where I have a 23-year-old, so luckily she is not anywhere near. At least I hope she's not anywhere near making me a grandpa. But
I'm in the same boat, Todd. I'm not ready to be a grandfather. No, not at all.
So I want to remind everyone too. It's this weekend's Veterans get the Veterans Day holiday. So if you if you watch the show during the holiday here, and if you know a veteran, make sure you reach out to them and say thanks. Thank them for their service. These guys sacrifice a lot. And Veterans Day, I know a lot of people kind of say, it's another day off. Some people work, but if it is a day off for you and you see someone, grab them, say hello and say thanks. I think that's it. That's about all we got. Rob, did you have any final questions for Stephen before we get out of here?
No, I think we can wrap it up. Stephen, it was great to have you on the show, getting an update of what's going on with CNET TV. It's always been a pioneer in the kind of online broadcasting space from the very early days. I know I had a kind of a redistribution agreement with CNET back in the early days with Brian Cooley with my own radio show back in the mid and early 2000s.
Cool.
So it's always been a great kind of, it's been great to watch what you guys are doing and how it's evolving.
So who's going to be your guy on the ground at CNET that's taking over your job?
Oh, actually,
CES, I'm sorry.
What I do at CES usually is I help direct the show and I mix the show, like the mixing board.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine is actually going to fill in my shoes, and I have to warn him that it's going to be intense. But he's coming in next week, and I'm on the ropes. And it should be really cool.
Well, if at all possible, I'd love to get an introduction to one of your team members. I'd love to see what you guys are doing behind the scenes and.
Oh yeah,
just nothing to see how the big boys do it there.
Yeah, we have a pretty amazing setup there. We have a full switcher, full HD video. It's basically we build a TV production room in that booth, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I pack up half my studio to make this thing happen, and it's kind of scary shipping $30,000-$40,000 worth of gear and then the security that's needed to protect it while it is there, and it's nuts. But people just can never get the scope of the show and the work that's entailed. It's
intense, man. That place is intense. It's constant. It's everyone's moving, going. It's warm in there. It's dry because all the electronics are sucking all the moisture out of the air, and it's Las Vegas. So yeah, it's always a very intense but fun time.
And then everyone comes back after that week and collapse and hopefully doesn't get the crud from the show.
Yeah.
It's crazy. All right. Well, anyway, hey, make sure that you get over to CNET, CNETTV.CNET.com or just go to CNET.com. You'll find the links on the website for sure for all our content. And definitely follow Stephen on Twitter. Let me put his, it's at Stephen Beachman, excuse me,
yeah,
Beckham,
right.
I
at
told
Stephen
it,
Beachum.
Beachum, yes, okay, not Beckham, Jesus, slap me in the head. So definitely follow him on Twitter, but we want to thank you for coming out today. Everyone, we'll see you next Saturday here. Contact Rob or I. It's either rob@newmediashow.com or todd@newmediashow.com. Send us your comments, suggestions for guests, and so forth. And we hope that you're getting something out of the content. And we know the audience is exploding, very happy with the audience numbers that are growing. So I'm hoping you guys are getting a lot out of this. We definitely appreciate it. And don't forget to vote for your favorite podcast over at thepodcastawards.com through the 15th of November. Until next week, we'll see you guys. Thanks for being here. Rob, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Thanks, Stephen.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
And we'll see everybody next time. Aloha.
Aloha.